Like everything else in the redoubt, it was something Wallace did as a ritualistic task.
Prisoner, Dr. Tanner is our honored guest. Without him, there could be no hope for the mechanism. He was sent as a sign that there is still a point, a purpose to our existence. He is a sign that our work can still continue.
And what, pray tell, is this work that I can help you continue? Why me?
You'll see in time, Doctor. But first, I must deal with the guard. Sarge Murphy?
Sir?
Your men were a disgrace out there today. Dead or missing, you were the only one to make it back.
What? But that can't be possible, sir. These outsiders could never best us in those conditions. We know them. They don't.
I fear there was a third party to the slaughter today. The Valley Dwellers, muti and inbred scum. The Valley Dwellers must have had a scavenging party in the vicinity. They must have intervened.
How do you know that?
The vidroom.
Why didn't you let me know?
Remember who you are and where you are, Sarge. The regs have ways of dealing with impertinence. There are prescribed punishments.
Sir, I apologize. But to what purpose was this knowledge kept from me?
It always pays to have a little training. I was interested to see how you'd cope with an assault on two fronts. You were found wanting, my friend.
The tension between the two men had escalated to a point where Doc was almost forgotten. Doc took this opportunity to stand back and observe, filing away character traits exposed in the argument for future reference. Who knew? It might be of use in any escape attempt he could contrive.
Good men died because you wanted a training exercise based on a random factor? Good sec is based on the elimination of the random factor.
No such thing. Look at the failure of one part of the mechanism. Random. The arrival of Tanner. Random. Tanner. Yes, Doctor, forgive me. I have been neglecting you. You have work to do, and we must prepare you for this. You are our honored guest, sent to us to aid in the war against the Reds.
But that all ended a long, long time ago.
Yes, the communist menace had ended a long time ago. But not for Wallace, Murphy, and the other inhabitants of this redoubt. And who was he to argue with them? Had the world of his beloved Emily, and of the whitecoats who'd kept him captive at Operation Kronos, ceased to be real to him, just because they had moved on in time and space? These men were as much prisoners of memory as he was, the difference being that at least his memories were his own, and not the half-remembered dreams of ancestors distorted through time. Jen Wallace suddenly rose to his feet.
Please, Doctor, follow me, and all will be made clear.
Doc fell into step behind the waddling Jen as Wallace left his office and headed along the corridor toward the elevator. Murphy left a short gap, then fell in behind his prisoner. Doc wasn't sure whether Murphy's caution in being a few steps behind him was actually a defensive measure or intended to impress Wallace. It would be futile of him to attempt any kind of escape at this point, not until he stood some chance of retrieving his lama and swordstick. As they progressed along the corridor, Doc noted that the redoubt had returned to the semi-bustling life that had marked it when they were first given the Gen's guided tour. Mechanics and orderlies went about their tasks. Sec men moved through the lower orders in their patched, faded, and much altered uniforms with a sense of purpose that was as much self-importance as anything else. Although the redoubt would appear at first glance to be a fully working military operation, Doc was aware of a kind of torpor in the air. They moved, they bustled, but almost as though through water or in slow motion, as if they'd forgotten why they were doing this. The only one who seemed to know was Wallace. Whether or not it was the original purpose, he at least had a clear idea of what he was doing, what they were all doing. The three men were silent still as Wallace led Doc past the laboratories where the psychological torture had taken place. From the corner of his eye, Doc saw Dr. Trix noting results from a monitor onto a clipboard. She looked up as they passed. For a fraction of a second, her eyes caught his. She was truly beautiful, out of place in this pest hole. Yet it was she who was responsible for their torture. Doc was sure there was a metaphor in there if only he could grasp it. It was that thought that occupied him until they reached the door that had remained closed to them on the earlier tour. It was an unassuming door, remarkable for nothing except that very fact. Perversely, that made it stand out all the more in a redoubt where everything else was clearly marked and delineated. What terrors could possibly lurk behind that bland exterior? Wallace reached for the sec panel at the side of the door, his index finger poised to tap in the code. Then he paused, finger still in midair, and turned to Doc.
Dr. Tanner, during your time at Operation Kronos, I understand that you learned a lot about the totality concept. Am I correct?
I picked up a little knowledge.
Did you ever hear of a project called Operation Rat King?
I cannot recall for certain.
I would have been surprised if you had answered in the affirmative, Doctor. It was part of the totality concept that was kept ultra-secret.
I thought that applied to all of the experiments in that maddened scheme.
Wallace graced him with the kind of smile usually reserved for drooling idiots or small children about to be chilled for their stupidity.
That's just the point of view I would expect from your case history, Doctor. I do hope it doesn't mean that you intend to be awkward and non-cooperative. That would be most unfortunate for all of us.
I do not see that I have a choice. It would help if you explained a little more.
Of course, of course. Some of the finest military, tactical, and philosophical brains of the time were brought to bear on the problem of how to outwit an enemy that had the equivalent of our military power in software and hardware. The answer, it was decided, lay in lateral thinking rather than the harsh, cold logic of the computer. To this end, it was decided that the way forward lay in the sphere of the biocomputer. Thus was constructed the Mobius Mark I, the Rat King.
A feeling of revulsion swept through Doc, churning at his guts and making acid bile rise to his throat. The word biocomputer was pregnant with meaning. As for the term Rat King, Doc suddenly remembered an incident from his past. It was the middle of March, 1881. It had to have been then, at the cusp of winter and spring, as the young Theophilus Tanner had just turned 15. The woods outside South Stafford were still sparse and bare, the foliage not having budded in the crisp air, air that frosted on his breath as he walked through the woods, trying to memorize the periodic table, reciting to himself.
Phosphorus? What is phosphorus?
Tanner tried to recall the correct symbol and match it to the element on the periodic table. He shook his head at the stubbornness of the answer, and so was easily distracted by the strange squealing sound that seemed to emanate from a hollowed-out tree trunk about 30 yards to his left. He paused, furrowed his brow, and strode to the tree trunk to investigate. The squealing seemed to separate out into more than one voice the nearer he got. It sounded for all the world like several animal voices in chorus. Curious, apprehensive, and perhaps just a little scared at what he might find, Tanner leaned over the hollow trunk so that he could see inside.
My goodness.
Half a dozen rats were at the base of the tree, struggling and squealing. Their bodies thrashed together, unable to separate and escape from each other because their tails were knotted, entwined in a spiraling tangle that ascended into the empty space above them. The knot was so tight, each movement making it tighter, that Tanner knew that nothing short of amputation would separate them. It would also probably kill them. Doc came back to reality with a shudder and a cold wave of nausea as he became aware of Wallace tapping in the access code and the door opening. Back in the woods outside South Stafford, the young Tanner had run away and left the Rat King to die. This time, he wouldn't be able to run.
Don't say it's storm less.
The companions and their captors emerged from the pass and into the main body of the valley.
It is less. I didn't say by much, did I, Cully?
Mac laughed so hard that the belly overhanging his ripped and patched camo pants shook and wobbled. The pants looked like those belonging to the sack man, and Jack figured that they were a trophy of a previous encounter.
Tell the little shit how you came by those pants, Mac.
Maybe I will, Tilly. You see, the insiders have always reckoned on how they were so good, and how all the old tech they still have makes them better fighters.
But they don't know the conditions, right?
You're damn right, One-Eye. You know that, too. I was watching you. They was fancy moves when you came from the inside, but you didn't know how to deal with the storm.
Not surprising. Never seen anything quite like that.
Shut up and keep carrying!
The bundle of rags, Tilly, was still suspended between the armorer and Mildred, who glared at her, but managed to refrain from comment for the present. Christy surveyed the land around them. It appeared that they were still in a valley, but a much larger one. The enclave formed around the entrance to the redoubt was a small indent into one side of the valley. Sheer rock walls ascended to a height she estimated at about 100 to 150 feet. The rock curved out in a wide parabola beyond her range of vision, but she figured that the valley as a whole had to be at least 30 square miles. The dust storm had abated. The sprays of dust and dirt were irritations rather than major problems, and the wind had died down from a gale to a small zephyr that plucked at their clothes and drove grit into their skin. But parts of the valley were obscured by more intense storms, small pockets of violent rage that scoured the land. The skies overhead were a puckered and constantly moving mixture of purple, red, and blue, the dark clouds of a chem storm breaking up and reforming under the buffeting of the winds and letting the sky above shine through.
I'd guess that you don't get much farming done around here.
How the fire blasted hell did you know that?
Just look at the skies and the storms. It's obvious. Guess we could always give you a few instructions on how to maybe make more of the land. After all, you must have realized that we don't come from the inside, did you call it?
Well, guess we could do with some help. Trading's hard down here. If we could maybe...
God, you fool!
Tilly was now fully conscious, but had decided that letting them carry her would disable them in conditions they weren't used to.
Don't listen to their lies. They came from inside. It's some kind of trick. It must be. They can't beat us in any other way, so they want to infiltrate and subvert from within. They want us to take these asswipes to our bosom so that they can smite us like a viper. No, there's only one thing awaiting them. The ritual.
Ryan and Jack exchanged glances. The mention of a ritual meant only one thing to them. A slow, painful chilling. Mildred dropped her end of the bundle of rags.
Oh, what the hell?
The woman hit the ground. J.B. let go of his end of the woman and looked at Mildred over the top of his glasses, scratching his head and pushing back his fedora.
Hell, John, if they're going to chill us anyway, why should we give a shit?
With their three captors laughing, this could be the only chance they needed. Jack spun on his heel, ducked underneath the barrel of Mac's blaster, and aimed a straight-edged blow at the man's gut. He felt his hands sink into the soft, fatty flesh before striking a wall of solid muscle. Mac wasn't as slow as his folk would have him believe. Even as Jack ducked underneath him, he raised the blaster just enough to let Jack come underneath, confident that he had enough muscle strength to withstand the blow, and then brought the barrel down sharply at the base of Jack's skull. Jack's white flowing hair was stained red as the sharp metal edges of the badly filed barrel tore the skin at his nape. The blow wasn't hard enough to render him unconscious, but it was enough to stun him and sent him momentarily to his knees. Before he had a chance to recover, Mac followed up with his fist, grabbing Jack's hair and bunching it, using it as a rope with which to pull the albino up level with his face. Then he thrust Jack away from him, and the small albino looked even more waif-like and lost as he sprawled in the dust, clinging onto his senses.
Don't fuck with us, white hair. We don't have much, but what we do have, we hold on to.
Okay, okay. Joke's over. We'll go with you and no trouble, all right?
Too slow?
Jack grinned ruefully as he picked himself up.
Thought just fat. Won't make mistake again.
You're fast. I'll make damn sure you don't get the chance.
Jack, Mildred, and JB were now grouped together under Mac's watchful eye. Tilly now stood at the back of the group, keeping a watchful eye on their rear. Christy and Dean were covered by the giant, while Ryan had the dubious pleasure of having two of their captors covering him, although in truth, neither seemed to be taking too much care about how he was covered. They followed a two-lane blacktop across the valley, the tarmac distorted and warped by the shift of the earth underneath, so that whorls and dips caused them to stumble. Their captors, however, seemed to know every little dip.
Mind if I ask a question?
You can ask, One Eye. Doesn't mean you'll get an answer, mind.
Seems fair. I was just wondering why you're not keeping watch for an ambush.
Excuse our impoliteness. Seems to me that you don't know this place at all. Maybe we were wrong about you.
Maybe you were. Still haven't answered my question, though.
True, true. See, this place is a pest hole. No one much comes here. No one would want to. Maybe we get some traders once in a purple moon, but mostly that's by mistake. There's only us and the insiders live here. No one else wants to settle here.
So why are you still here?
Born here, live here, die here. That's the way of things.
We get by. We'd get by a whole lot better if the mother insiders would leave us alone.
Why don't they leave you alone?